Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas on the Developer Relations team.
I'm Tor Norby from Android Studio.
And I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
And I'm Sarah Morandi on the Android Privacy team.
Hey, I'm Philip. I'm working with Sarah on Privacy too.
I feel like our guests have already told our listeners what we're going to talk about today.
I thought we were going to be all secretive about everything, but apparently not. No. So we knew that the Privacy Week was coming up for one of the 11 weeks in Android, so we thought we would get a couple of engineers from the team to tell us more details about how some of this stuff actually works. So welcome to the show. Let me start off. Maybe do you want to give us a high-level view of like what was the big idea behind the privacy changes in this release?
Yeah, sure. I can talk about that. So with privacy, actually, this release, we didn't significantly do anything different when it comes to our high-level objectives and goals. We really just continue to build on previous releases' privacy features. So at a very high level, what we really care about is bringing users more control, bringing users more transparency, and data minimization. So those are really the three big areas that we continue to focus on. And with each release, as we think about what features we're going to build, we really pivot around these three themes.
When you say data minimization, in terms of what apps have access to, in terms of the surface area of stuff that what they can transfer, they can grab from the user, the user is giving permission to, like, what do you mean?
Yeah, so I would say it really comes down to two big areas. One is what you touched on. So it's what apps have access to. So we really try to think about how do we scope down permissions? And the second is we want to help developers better understand their data access in order to minimize it. So in this release, we've invested a lot of time in providing tools for developers to bring more transparency and understanding of their data accesses in goal of minimizing them.
So actually, that's a perfect segue because the first thing I was going to ask about was data access auditing, which I know I've talked a little bit to Philip about to understand some of the details there. But you brought it up. Why don't you give us an introduction? What is that?
Why don't I let Philip talk about that? Because okay. He is the mastermind behind this tool.
Yeah, so I don't like to tell developers that they should yes use less data, right? I want developers to build great features, and some of the great features require private data. Usually, often features are better with private data, right? So I do want developers to use it if it's appropriate. So what I don't want developers is to use private data when it's not appropriate. And it can be not appropriate from two perspectives. One is if the developer doesn't expect it to happen, or if the user doesn't expect it to happen. So let's go through the first case, if the developer doesn't expect it to happen. Lots of developers have either very, very large apps, which lots of legacy code develop. The initial author of the code is long gone and nobody understands the code anymore. But it might still access private data, and it might access it unnecessarily because there's no better APIs and it could be done without private data access. So we want developers to find these places and replace them with the better APIs. The other case for a similar direction is if you use a third-party library, you have really no clue what's going on in there, right? It's like, and we want the person who ships the app, who puts his logo on the app, right, and is finally responsible for all the data accesses, we want them to know what's going on in the third-party libraries, at least when it comes to private data. So our tools allow basically to monitor what these libraries are doing, at least from the private data perspective. The other side is how the user expects private data to be used, right? So if you show the name of a contact or the face of a contact on the screen, the user expects that there was some access to the contacts, the private data collected by private data protected by the context permission. And so we want to make sure that the user expectations can be mapped to what the system actually does, right? So the developer can use our APIs to make sure that the access is actually logged on the system side, and then can look at the critical user journey or the screen and see if the user expected this time. So we can do a matching there. And so again, the point is about data minimization, not about less. It's about making the accesses at the time that a user or the developer expects it to happen. And then, yes, please use private data to improve your features.
So can I want to follow up on a conversation we were having internally based on stuff people were asking about on Twitter, which is the ability for us to expose information through data access auditing differs based on what's going on inside the system. I think the first question that came up was, it didn't seem to work, and I forget, was it somewhere in Bluetooth, I think? It didn't seem to work as expected, and it turns out there was like some, you know, asynchronous behavior in the code that meant, well, we can't return a call stack because at the time that this is happening, we don't actually have the information about where it came from. Can you help us understand like how this thing works internally or what people are supposed to do in those situations?
Yes. So how do you define a place in the developer's code? How is that defined? And the way that we define it is basically a Java backtrace, right? Java backtrace gives you a unique position in the code. The way it works is that the app calls into a data provider, usually a system server or media server, audio server, these kind of things, or GMS core, and asks for data. You can use a content provider like content resolver.query, or it does location manager.getLastKnownLocation or whatever, right? And so this causes a binder call into the data provider. Data provider prepares the data and sends it back. And in the sending back of the binder call, so in the return from the binder call, we attach a little piece of information to the binder call that says, during this binder call, this kind of data was accessed. And then in the system internal handling of the return of the binder call, we actually call back into the app and said, hey, you just accessed location data. What do you want to do? Right? And then they can take a backtrace, or they can log it, they can crash if it's an unexpected access, or whatever. So this is how you get the backtraces. Basically getting called back when the binder returns. Android is historically grown, so a lot of things are not as simple. So like you mentioned, the Bluetooth LE case, when you call Bluetooth LE.adapter.scan or something, you expect at this time a location to be accessed because Bluetooth scanning is a proxy for location data. But because of how it's implemented, it goes into the system server and out of the system server and back into the system server and back out of the system server. So it's not a single call, hence this, it's literally short three times. So it's actually not a direct call, hence this tracking goes away. What happens in this case is that the system still tells you, hey, you accessed location data, it just calls you back later and or at an inappropriate time. So these backtrace might not be useful. This is fairly rare, though. I think it's Bluetooth LE is one I know, and another thing I know is audio recording, where there are some issues in certain cases, but in almost all cases, it works just fine.
Okay. Good. Anything else on access auditing? Or should
actually, I have a question about the access auditing. So not knowing anything about the APIs and just having seen, so I just gave a talk with Chet, a talk that I'd never seen until I gave the talk. And on one of the slides is an example of data access auditing code. And I noticed there's this pattern in the API. So you override functions called onNoted, onSelfNoted, and their object called syncNotedAppUp. What does noted mean in that context?
Yeah, so it's like a semantic thing that's very important to me, but might be a little bit confusing for developers looking at it. So there's permissions. Permissions are there to protect access of any kind, but in this case of private data. There's a separate system in Android which tracks data accesses. And data access is usually protected by permissions. So it's really kind of the same, but kind of not the same. And the system that tracks data access is called AppOps, which is before rarely used by anybody, but now it shows through because, well, now we're talking about data tracking. And the way that we log a data access, basically we tell the system data access happened, is called a node op operation. That's the reason why we call them the node. Basically, the data provider nodes sends a node to the system that a data access happened. This is where the word node
comes from. That makes sense.
And, so as in, it was noticed. You know how like on some Unix systems, if you try to type sudo to do something and you don't have the permission, it'll not just say no, but it'll say, and we have alerted the root account that you tried to do sudo. So it's one of those things like, hey, you try. Not only did you try, but we noticed that you tried and we're going to report it to the authorities.
But you, so slight tangent, but you said something interesting. You just mentioned that, you know, Bluetooth is a way to get access to location. And again, Chet and I, we gave a talk on, what was that talk called, Chet? Well, basically it was a history of the changes, you know, throughout Android to like make the system safer and better. Basically what developers have to deal with were, you know, in a way we are a bit sorry that you have to deal with those things, but they're always in the service of our users. And it was interesting because in every release, you know, we make a change, basically, oh, and now there's restrictions on Bluetooth because it can be used for location. Oh, and now there's a restriction on EXIF data because it can be used for location, and so on and so on. So it seems that it's very difficult like to find all those possible vectors of information leaking. Like how do you deal with this on your team? Like,
I totally understand developers. It is super annoying that you have to write code and you have like build checks everywhere, right? So I recently wrote a little sample app for an internal project, and it was full of if SDK build dot version SDK int is bigger than 28, do that. If it's smaller than 26, do that. And it's I totally agree. Privacy. Android came from a point in Android L where there was basically no privacy, right? So it was all on install time. You approve it once, and then it's
there. I would put it differently. I would say there was a lot of trust.
A lot of trust, correct. And now we go more into user, giving the user the power. And every time we do this, like every time we go one step further, we have to make sure that they're somehow backwards compatible. But then the question is, should we allow the apps to, do the apps have to opt in to the new behavior? Or do we allow the user to not necessarily break the apps, but let the apps slightly misbehave? Right. For example, what thing we do is we instead of breaking the app, we just don't give data to the app, return null or these kind of things. And I totally agree, it's annoying. And I'm actually kind of sorry for it, but I don't know a better solution because you basically retroactively propping a security model onto a trust system.
Well, my point was less about that because, you know, for better or worse, like I feel like, you know, developers are used to this a little bit. Doesn't make it better, but it's more that, for instance, for data access, like, did we know about all those problems and, you know, we fix them like over time because we don't want to put too much burden on the apps? Or is it because every time we add a restriction, then creative developers find a different way to access the data, and then we have to patch that. And, you know, it's this continuous like game of chasing each other.
Can you describe this further? The data access is more about telling the apps what's going on in their own app. It's not really about restricting anything.
Well, so, this particular API, I was just following the what you said about Bluetooth, being able to use Bluetooth as a way to access location, because there are different ways of accessing location that is not just requesting the GPS, right?
Many.
Like my favorite example is like if you look at the EXIF data of a photo, you can reasonably tell where the user is if they took the photo recently, which is why like now you can't access that data anymore.
Yeah, and people find new things, right? So people use the gyroscopic sensors to measure vibration of the phone and thereby imply, you know, or people use the camera to look at chip specs and thereby get audio and these kind of things. But it's a whack-a-mole.
I would also add, I think with Android being open source, we have the benefit of all these researchers who invest, you know, a lot of their time and their careers in trying to figure out different ways of finding leaks within our operating system. But that actually works to our advantage. So we read those reports, we try to digest them, we try to understand how do we try to make our operating system even more safe and private for users. So some of these, I think, to your point, we don't always know about right away. And over time, as some developers figure out ways around accessing the data with different APIs, we learn about them and we try to close them down over time. But again, we're careful. I think backward compatibility is a big consideration for us. So I think it's part of it is Android's open source and we get the benefit of a massive research community that brings insights.
Yeah, the scary thing is, there was this research paper, I think that came out last week, a couple of weeks ago, where researchers showed that by looking at the flickering of lights, you can basically spy on conversations because vibrations of air are enough to affect your light bulbs. So for all we know, someone could be recording your conversation by using, the camera or the light sensor.
No, I can't go to sleep at night tonight thinking about this. Thank you so much.
All right. I wanted to move on to some of the other stuff that happened since there was a lot of things in Android 11. One of the things that I thought was interesting was one-time permissions, because it's not just out of the blue. It was an evolution of a previous permission change that we made in Android 10, right? We went from do you want to give this permission in the foreground or are you okay with it in the background as well? And then we basically cranked that up a little bit higher. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So with one-time permission, we actually conducted quite a bit of user studies. And there's obvious use cases for a lot of users who feel like sometimes they either want to try out features or they actually want to just grant for one time. Maybe they're just taking a picture of their credit card for a pay app. So there's very strong use cases that convince us that this is the right thing to do for the users. And since its launch, I think the feedback has been pretty great. And we're hearing from users that it's a feature that they've been waiting for. So it's really been it's a natural evolution, but yet it's something that, in hindsight, I feel like we should have thought about.
I was wondering whether you also heard from developers. As Philip said, a lot of these changes can be painful and you end up with these, conditions in the code, and every release, there's a little bit of behavior change that you need to handle. This seems one where if you had already made changes to do the right thing, given some of the other permissions changes, hopefully there wasn't much for them to do. Was that in fact the case, or did you hear some collective groaning from developers on this as well?
Yes and no. So we made sure, to kind of give you a bit more context around what the thinking was as we were developing this, we actually didn't want developers to do anything drastically different. So if you see the way the APIs have been built, if you've been asking for foreground location, that still remains. There's no new API for this. Developers don't have to do anything differently. However, for developers that are targeting SDK R+, we are giving them an opportunity to actually use their own UI to tell a narrative to the user, tell them why that feature needs access to background location. So there is some work that is required from developers, but developers who've already upgraded to only this time, they definitely did not need to do anything differently.
To follow up on this a little bit, the APIs to ask for permissions are very limited, right? There's basically two. And there is a certain amount of dance, a certain amount of recommended flow that an app has to go through. And this is, let's call it strongly recommended to go through this flow, which is, if you go to d.android.com and check for request permission, is described there. If your app differs from this flow, it might end up in situations which are unexpected, especially when it comes to one-time and auto-revoke. So I would recommend for all app developers to check out how these two features affect them. And if they see weird behavior, check the recommended flow and see if their implementation matches the recommended flow.
I had a follow-up question about this feature specifically too, that I think this question came up in one of the talks I was giving. How long does one time mean? I think it's not just when it's in the foreground, right? When it goes in the background, it's kind of in this sort of purgatory state. Is it like until it gets killed, or is it just some amount of time that we don't specify that's hard coded somewhere?
Yeah, it's a fair question that I think any developer would want to know. So it's when the app gets moved to a background state, it's still the app can maintain the permission for a certain amount of time. The reason why we don't specify this is because we're actually running a lot of tests. We want to see how these different use cases are impacted. It's something that we might change in the future, depending on how the feature behaves in the wild. So that's why we haven't specified it.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sorry, I just want to add one more thing there, though. One thing that we have heard a lot from developers who wonder about this feature, if they happen to launch a foreground service, so if you're a navigation type app that launches a foreground service to navigate, they will continue to keep the permission. So they won't lose it. So the user's not going to be in a bad state eventually. So we've made sure that that doesn't happen. It's only when the foreground service is killed and the app is moved to the background for a certain amount of time is when the permission is revoked.
So is there a mechanism to find out when it's being revoked then? So if your app is, you know, going into the background, maybe like they can certainly find that out and pop it into a foreground service at that point if they know they need to maintain it, but they could optionally wait until they know it's going away. Okay, so there's no callback mechanism.
No, so there's two things. First, whenever a permission gets revoked from an app, the app gets killed. So the app itself never experienced the actual revocation event. The app just gets killed and restarted, and then it's gone. So there's no need for callback because the app goes away. That also means the permission can only be revoked while the app is not visible to the user. Otherwise, the app will leave the screen, which would be bad. The other part you mentioned is, if the app tries to, from the background, then start a foreground service to avoid the situation, that's another thing that, is it an R, please prevent? Does anybody know more about this?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, apps can't launch a foreground service from a background state if they have a while in use permission.
Okay, so wait, so then how does that use case work that you were talking about where they know they're going into the background and they need to continue to have this permission for some amount of time, so they need a foreground service?
Yeah, so in that case, the user has, either the user or the app has launched a foreground service when the app was on a top state.
Right, is the idea here, since we haven't specified what certain means, like right now they have the permission for a certain time. So you can have a buggy behavior, we just assume that you're going to have it, and right now certain works out to your favor, in the future it might not. If you, based on feedback, you change it to be shorter. Is the right thing for developers to do to always make sure they keep re-requesting the permission? And I guess that'll just be auto-granted if it's still within the interval of the, you know, the certain interval. But if it's not, it would be the right thing, right, to ask again, I assume.
So if I understand correctly, so if it's within the interval, so let's say I'm switching between apps and it's within that interval, I go back to the app I've granted location to, it keeps the location permission as long as it's within the interval. However,
but the app developer can't assume that, right? Because we don't know what you haven't defined how long we're going to hold on to this permission. So as a developer, anytime I need, should I keep re-requesting it, the one-time thing? And so yes, that if yes, it's expired, I would just ask again.
So again, what I said before, the only time when a permission gets removed for an app is when the app gets killed. So the app, the permission doesn't get removed while the app is running. So the app has to, when the app restarts, right, activity or create or whatever, at this time, it has to check if the permissions are still there. But if the app checked if a permission was there once, and it was there, this is a state that stays correct for the whole lifetime of the app, for this process.
I see. Huh. As long as you just keep it as process state, not something you persist.
So don't
persist
taken,
these things, please.
For some reason, I thought it was being taken away like while it was in the background, like after that interval of time, it could disappear. So you're saying it actually needs to be killed for it to be taken away.
It's just how permissions work. Yeah, the app is killed. When the permissions revoked, the app is killed.
Right, just that, you know, you're talking about, again, a certain interval. And so if my app is in the background for 24 hours, as long as the system doesn't kill it, you're not going to kill it. So the interval is 24 hours. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, we are actually killing it, right? So the permission system decides, okay, now the interval is off. Now I want to revoke a permission. So it revokes permission and kills the app. So we don't rely on natural killing.
Just for an extra measure, just to rub it in. Like, not only are we taking the permission away, we're also kicking you in
the
head.
I think the point is that developers should not make assumptions, check your permissions, request your permissions. Because yes. I assume this kind of behavior is like will change, will be tweaked over time.
Also, we in our documentations, we do advise developers that users, even when you have been given the permission, the user can always go into settings and remove that permission. So this should be something that developers are used to seeing.
And it means it's very easy for you to test because you can go do that yourself for your own app.
Yeah, and it seems like the fact that you're killing the app is probably good. So that's not an extra implementation complexity for me, right? Like, I can just kind of assume that as long as I'm alive, I have the permissions I have. And all Android apps have to gracefully deal with getting killed anyway, because that can happen in low memory situations and background and all that other stuff.
Right.
Correct. So again, to reiterate on that, for one time, if you follow the recommended flow, for one time, you have to do exactly nothing. Everything just works. Have you talked about background location permission yet? Because there's slight differences, but usually it also just work, but there's slight things you can do better if you're targeting SDK 30.
What an excellent segue. I was going to ask about background location. So let's talk about it.
Yes, this one comes up often. So why don't I'll spend just maybe a minute explaining sort of the inspiration behind this and why we decide to limit access to background location. The truth is we did a pretty deep audit of all sorts of apps that request access to background location, and their use cases were fairly limited. There was a handful of them. So location tracking type apps, there's geofencing type apps. Those tend to legitimately need access to background location. So this led us to believe, actually, I should add, we also did user studies where we saw users don't think they're granting access to background location. We ask them, how many apps do you think on your phone have access to background? And they'll say, oh, I think 5. And then we'll go through their settings, and literally almost every single app will have access to background location. So we said there's a clear disconnect here. So why don't we make it easier for the users and actually restrict access to background location? So that's sort of the inspiration behind why we implemented this change in R.
So I'm curious, like you said, not that many apps actually need this functionality. So what did you find in your investigations? Like, why were all the apps getting it then? Just because it was easy, they may as well get it?
So I should actually just, not so many use cases require access to background. So there's obviously a lot of location tracking apps out there, and there's a whole bunch of geofencing, but the use cases are fairly well defined and limited. It's a great question. I think, you know, one thing we notice with permissions is users often or sometimes don't think about what they're granting access to. So they're saying yes or allow, and they're granting it. So, you know, a lot of what we try to do is try to make things easier for the user and have safe defaults for them where possible.
And so the background location was implemented in Android Q in, what's your official name, Android 10? And it's still behaving mostly the same in Android R, Android 11. And so there's still a background permission the app can ask for. There's two small differences in terms of behavior. First is that before you could ask for foreground and background location at the same time. Now this has to be two explicit separate requests. So if your app is targeting SDK 30, you can't ask for both at the same anymore, because the our insight was that this is such a important permission for users. Like, it's literally tracking you, right? That's the definition of background location, is tracking you. That it warrants extra explanation to the user that this needs to be done. The second change that developers have to deal with is that instead of a runtime dialogue, they are now basically getting a full screen settings page. the app developers still have call request permission the same way, but it just shows a different kind of dialogue. And in this, before it was like a basically allow, deny, and now it's getting to a settings page, and they have the user has to manually find the right button and click the right button. And we have added an additional API, get background option label or something. And this tells you the string the user needs to click on to enable background location. So the app developer has to justify the private data need to the user and has to tell the user which button to click.
So it's like a little puzzle to solve in the middle of using the app. So
yeah, isn't that fun? Fun for everybody, man.
Engineers
for the developer,
love puzzles.
For the user. User has to.
I'm curious. Like there was an interesting UI introduced a couple of releases ago where we took some small subset of settings and allowed it to propagate into UI that you could run in line. There's basically a settings panel that could show up in line in the application. And this is not what we're doing with location, but one of the reasons to do that is because you don't really want your users to leave your app because they may not come back, right? So have we found that with this? Like, well, when they end up in the setting page and they're, you know, finding the right string on the page, do they end up, you know, correctly hitting the back key and going back into the app, or do we then lose some traffic?
Exactly. I think that's exactly the point which is important here. It's about if the user stays inside of the flow and it's easy to do, or if the user gets taken out of the flow, full screen activity, has to press back to get back. So the user is ripped out of the normal flow and has to now do a much more conscious decision. Before it is, the user just says, allow, leave me alone, right? And we wanted to avoid the user just pressing all blue buttons, or pixel at least, all the blue buttons. We want the user to make really a conscious decision. That was the idea behind this different UX. I know it makes it harder for the developer, but again, this is the definition of tracking. So this permission is more important than other ones.
I was going to change. Sarah, I didn't know if you had something else to add there.
No, I was actually going to say that it's a bit early to also tell if, you know, if users are going back to the app or not. So it's something we'll monitor. We listen closely to users and we'll monitor their feedback and see how they're interacting with the feature.
Okay. I was going to change tracks a little bit and ask about another interesting feature, the auto reset. This is a new one that surprised me this time around. Can you talk about that one?
Yeah. So it's a pretty simple feature to define. So basically, if a user has old apps on their device that they haven't used in a very long time, the system will do a check. If it's an old app, then it will revoke all its runtime permissions. And really, I mean, what really inspired this feature was, on average, users have about 70 to 90 apps on their devices, and they only use a third of them. So when you're setting up a device for the first time, you're granting permissions to it, and you just set and forget it. And again, we've done a ton of user studies, and users have said that I have a bunch of apps that I don't use. I forget about them. They forget to uninstall. And I should also add, what's really interesting as we were developing this feature and some of the user insights we gained from it is users think about their permissions as almost like a transaction. Their data is a transaction. So for them, they actually felt it's really unfair for an app to be able to access their private data if they're not using the app anymore or the features of the app. So that's sort of how the feature came about.
I was sort of curious. So long time ago, I installed a ebook reader app and basically never used it. You know, maybe I read one book on there, and then months and years went by and I didn't use it. And I looked at Logcat one day, and there was a background service doing all kinds of stuff, you know, syncing with my account, downloading stuff I hadn't asked for, all the stuff obviously taking up, you know, CPU time and battery that I didn't want it to because I didn't use the app anymore. So the question is, finally, if an app is installed that actually does launch a background service that does stuff like this, does it still qualify as something that is not active? Or does the system say, yep, user is still using that, even though I, the user, had never actually launched that app again?
So if this app is doing stuff in the background, like syncing, that is not considered usage.
So it has to be foreground activity to qualify for keeping the permissions.
Yes.
But is that some of that work, I assume, doesn't require permissions, right? Like, is this also going to prevent old apps that I haven't run in forever to do work on my behalf, even if it's not technically asking for something like location or camera?
I think you're giving us ideas for our future features.
All right.
There is changes to, I think, what I call the standby bucket, that apps which are not used for a long, long time are, I don't know the exact details, but they are allowed to run less often for some certain definition of less often. So it's actually quite often that battery and permissions overlap to a certain degree because it's access to something, right? And so in unused apps, it overlaps. And in R, we focus on the unused permissions, and there is some other feature on battery, which I'm not totally details about.
Yeah, I think that was an Android 10 thing where we more clearly defined the standby buckets, and there was like, you know, basically the less frequently the user used the application, the less resources, the fewer resources the app had access to, including network stuff. I don't know if it ever cranked down to you can't do anything, but there was definitely some limitations.
Regarding this feature, again, for developers, how they should interact with it. Most apps, I assume, really don't need to run at all and don't need permissions if they're not used by the user. There are some apps, though, that do need that. For example, if you have like a security app that tracks your location in case an emergency happens, you never open the app, but when the emergency happens, you want it to work and you wrote it work correctly with all the permissions. There is a switch in settings somewhere where the app developer can direct the user to and say, hey, please flip the switch so auto revoke will not affect my app. And so if you are a developer who has a security critical feature, or if your app is purely running in the background, I don't know, an Exchange sync adapter or something like that, then ask the user to flip the switch. Most apps, though, probably won't need that.
Okay. I imagine an emergency service popping up on the screen and then saying, but first, we need you to go to settings to give us permission to tell you the following emergency.
So. Yeah, like, you crashed your car. Can you please answer these 17 questions before we can call the authorities?
Here's what the string looks like in the settings dialog.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Sarah.
So just to add, we specifically, because of this reason, we target SDK this feature. Because we do want developers to be aware of it. It's important that they are. And if you fall in the category of safety, emergency, security, please make sure that you are adding a flow, that you're asking the user to disable this. It's critical for your app. So this is main reason why it was target SDK.
And I know the question came up about duration here too, like how long after they stop using it? I think the answer was, yeah, that's another thing we're not answering because we continue to test and adjust.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I imagine-
So we're going to wind up pretty soon.
Sorry, like if you really want to know the answer, you can probably go look at the source code, right?
For now.
Oh, source code. Actually, completely topic we didn't talk about. Maybe not so important to users, and not so important to developers or users, but very important to me, is that part of these permission system are now updatable via, I'm not sure what the official name is. We call it mainline
software.
Modules internally.
Oh.
Yeah, software, yeah. And so this allows us to tweak these heuristics after the fact a little bit, right? For the better or for the worse. But if you see issues, we can later on fix them, which is great. But it also means that it's not hard-coded, right, like it used to be. And we can fix bugs.
We're going to wind this up pretty soon. I know some of us have a conflict coming up. Did we forget to ask anything, or is there anything you want to toss in?
I think the only thing I would add is we have improved our developer documentation on this stuff. So I think Philip has mentioned this multiple times already. It's so important to follow the best practices. Because with some of these new changes that we've introduced, especially with one-time and auto-reset permissions, it will have an impact on your app if you haven't followed best practices. So we highly, highly, highly recommend that.
And where do we find these docs? Because, you know, that's one of the issues with Android development. There's a lot of docs, right? And, you know, if you just search Stack Overflow, you'll find the post from 2011, probably answered by Romain, but it might not reflect the very latest.
I would say, please, our friendly Android developer relation team has been awesome in getting these docs updated on the Android dev site. So please go to DAC. It's the latest and greatest. That team has been, they're on top of everything. So that's where I would go for my source.
Well, we'll find the best link for permissions practices and post that in the blog. All right. Cool. Then I think that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.